I'm one of those annoying people who sleep soundly on a plane. I wake for the meals, I wake for the Sandra Bullock movie, and otherwise I spend the whole flight in a happy dreamland. And yet, I still suffer from jet lag after long-haul flights. It seems stupendously unfair. So, what do we know about what causes jet lag? What's the best way to overcome it? Professor Leon Lack has been working in sleep studies for over 30 years. He's also the co-inventor of a set of glasses called the Retimer that proponents believe help relieve symptoms. And he joins us from Adelaide, where he's just landed after a long-haul flight. Leon, obviously you have to be a poster boy for travelling well and not suffering too badly from jet lag. Talk us through the science of jet lag. What do we know about it? What causes it?
Well, like you say, you still experience jet lag, even though you might get sufficient sleep on the plane. And I got probably enough sleep on the plane, too, coming across the Pacific. But the jet lag is due to the fact that your body clock, your what are called the circadian rhythms, the 24-hour rhythms in our bodies, have a very strong effect on our sleepiness and our alertness as to when they occur across the day. Generally, they tend to coincide with the nighttime when we're trying to sleep, which is handy. That is your sleepy period of your circadian rhythms. And the alert phase of your circadian rhythms tend to occur during the daytime. But those rhythms are what we call endogenous and continue on with a strong momentum, almost like a big pendulum swinging back and forth. It's a little bit hard to change the timing of that pendulum. And so when we fly overseas across a lot of time zones, our body clock is still on our home time zone, and we feel its effects then when we arrive in our destination. So that if you're trying to sleep during your body clock daytime, your sleep isn't very sufficient. It's shorter than normal and fragmented. And if you're trying to stay awake across your circadian sleep period, then you really feel the dramatic effects of that. You're slowed down. You're not performing well. We know that our body temperature oscillates or alternates between high and lows by our circadian rhythms. Our metabolic rate changes along with our body temperature. So when you're at your sort of trough of your body temperature and metabolic rate, your reactions are slowed down, your thinking slowed down, your speech is slowed down, and everything is, and you feel very sleepy too, despite the fact you might have had enough sleep on the plane.
Leon, why is it that people's mileage on this varies? Why are some people more susceptible to being hit hard by jet lag, whereas others kind of blithely go through? Is that all circadian rhythms, or is there a genetic element to this?
Well, there could well be, but there are a lot of other explanations as well. If you do obtain sufficient sleep on the plane, then you're probably not as affected as strongly the following day when you arrive. You may be affected more strongly the next few days because you could catch up on your sleep, but your body clock is still out of sync with your destination. It could be the case that some people have an amplitude of their body clock rhythms that's not quite as dramatic, it's not as robust, and so they can slip back and forth between time zones a little bit more easily. Those people are perhaps like night shift workers. There are some people who adjust to night shift much more easily than other people.
So
there are differences.
There's so many kind of myths and theories surrounding jet lag. I mean, is there any truth to the idea that it matters which direction you're flying in?
Yes, there is a general truth to that. It turns out to probably be explained most easily by the fact that most people in the population have an internal body clock, which running on its own speed takes a little bit longer than 24 hours to complete a cycle, so maybe 24 hours and 15 or 20 minutes. So most of us, the majority of the population, have this tendency to delay our body clock, unless we get exposed to the normal 24-hour cues in our environment, like light and darkness. So if we fly in a westward direction, let's say you fly from here to Europe, you may need to delay your body clock by 8 or 9 hours, depending on what daylight savings time in one place or the other, in order to adjust to, say, European time zone. And that tends to be a little bit easier for most people than, say, flying the equivalent number of time zones in the eastward direction, which would be, for example, from Australia to the east coast of the United States. And the explanation for that is that since our bodies tend to want to delay naturally, and delaying is what's required when we fly westward, then that process seems to be going with the grain, in other words, with our natural tendency.
That makes an alarming amount of sense. I'm not even going to bother asking you if it's true that you get it because you've left your soul behind somewhere. So tell us about solutions for this thing, because I know that, you know, you're a clinical psychologist. You spend a lot of time looking at kind of non-drug treatment for things like insomnia in that capacity. But what are the ways that we can deal with jet lag?
Well, since the major cause of jet lag is the lack of synchrony between our internal body clock and our destination environment, then what we need to do is try to retime our internal body clock more quickly to adjust to our destination so that we're not left with a week or two of feeling out of sorts until we finally adjust. We know that bright light is the strongest cue for adjusting or retiming the body clock. So the best advice, for example, when you fly overseas and you arrive at your destination, is to stay outside in the sunshine as much as you can. Sunshine outside is probably the strongest intensity of light, and we know that the more intense the light, the more effective it is at retiming the body clock. But also the timing of the light with respect to our body clock, which becomes a little bit of a complicated issue. But basically, if you fly to a new environment, that to experience then the outside sunshine, when you're at the daytime, and that will help push your body clock into the right position so that your sleep tends to be more preferred than at nighttime.
And this is where your fancy goggles come in, your technical jiggery-pokery that's going to make the world a better place.
Yes, well, the retimers are a bright light device, a bright light therapy device, and they can be worn, you know, in place of the exposure to light outside. If you fly into an environment in which it's wintertime, it's cold and wet, or, you know, cloudy outside, then you may need some extra light stimulation that's not afforded by the outside, or if it's, you know, if it's too cold to go outside. And so that's where the retimers can come in handy. It'll actually come in handy for me. I'm going to be wearing them at night times now for the next couple of nights, because we're in the wintertime now and the sun goes down at 5 o'clock, and I need to get some bright light therapy between 5 o'clock and probably 10 o'clock at night. That will more rapidly shift my body clock to a later time. Otherwise, I'll be feeling like going to bed at about 7 o'clock tonight and waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning, and that's not going to be really very practical for readjusting.
Leon, I'm not convinced there aren't parents around the country thinking about whether they can use these glasses to get children to sleep at the right time, but that's a conversation for another day. Thanks so much for joining us. That was Professor Leon Lack. He's Professor of Psychology at Flinders University and a visiting psychologist at the Adelaide Institute for Sleep Health. Do you have any of your own tried and true remedies for fighting the dreaded lag? I've posted mine onto our Blueprint for Living Facebook page, so add yours to the mix. I'd love to hear them.